Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Extra time.
Hello everyone and welcome back to Extra Time. It's me, I'm back from my holiday. I'm really sorry to have to ruin what was a hot run brought to you by Mike Atkins and Henry Hill, but I've got some compensation for you today. I've brought back Doogie Critchley to the podcast. Hello, Doogie.
Hello. Hi, Pat. How are you doing?
I'm very well, thank you, Doogs. How are you?
Yeah, I'm okay, actually. I'm okay. I had a pretty busy weekend, but it was topped off because we're basically trying to change ERU, so our Monday show on Eurofootball Daily. And I watched Real Madrid, Real Sociedad to base it around that, and it finished 0-0, which meant that I was editing a 0-0 game till 12 last night on a Sunday night. So pretty tired, but otherwise good. But yeah, excited for today's podcast.
Even for you, watching a 0-0 in La Liga feels a little bit niche.
I did get to watch Ferland Mondi, though, who just goes from strength to strength. He's awesome. But yeah, the rest of Real Madrid's attacking players, not very good last night.
I looked at the lineups later on, and was there a guy called Marvin who played for Real Madrid? And if so, who is he?
So he's this young player. They were talking about him. He's got like four different nationalities. I think it's like Nigerian, Korean, and I can't remember the other two. But he's this young winger. He came on, and he was basically getting bullied by the rest of the Real Madrid team. They were basically like instructing him to go everywhere. He made one nice run, but he looked a little bit out of his depth. But early days for him. But yeah, he's this young winger that they've got from the academy.
Okay, interesting. Well, we are going to be talking about some interesting players today because we thought we'd take a little look at Liverpool's transfer business. Obviously, at the beginning of the summer, everyone said Liverpool are going to be quiet. They're not really going to do anything. And now suddenly, in the space of a couple of weeks, they've spent 100 million euros. Mm-hmm. And it looks like they could go on to spend more. They're currently linked with a couple of centre-backs. We're going to talk about those as well. But we thought we'd run the rule over the players they've bought, how we think those will slot into the squad or the first 11, depending who they are. And then we're going to bring something back from last week. Last week's episode was one thing that we learnt about each Premier League club from the first week of the season. I thought that'd make quite an interesting segment going forward. Mm. So I would like to know the one thing that you've learnt this week, Dukes. But before that, let's talk Liverpool. Okay, so Liverpool so far this summer have signed Kostas Tsimikas, they've signed Thiago Alcantara, and now they've signed Diogo Jota from Wolves as well. So shall we start with Tsimikas? This guy obviously brought in because they failed to get that move over the line for Jamal Lewis, who's since gone on to join Newcastle, which, you know, Newcastle, big club and everything, but that's probably a little bit disappointing for him. Tsimikas, I think, cost them about 14 million euros. He's 24 years old. He is unsurprisingly Greek. Dukes, what do you think of this signing? Because this is somebody who's got to play backup to one of the best left backs in the world.
Yeah, I think it's a great move for him. You know, a change from Olympiacos to Liverpool to join one of the best squads in world football. Fantastic. And for Liverpool, you know, I know very little about him as a player, to be honest. I didn't watch a lot of Olympiacos last year. But his numbers in the Europa League were really pretty promising. Over, you know, one back possession over five times, close to two dribbles a match as well. So it looks like he's got enough about him to at least contribute at Liverpool. But for Liverpool, before the window, I think I would have said backup left back was a necessity. It was almost the thing they had to do this summer. I mean, Thiago's a lovely addition. Diogo Jota, you know, that depth in the forward line, we've been talking about that for a couple of years. But for me, that backup left back was so necessary just because Robertson, you know, he's got a phenomenal fitness record. I think he's played over 45 games for the last two seasons, but that can't be relied on. Well, it shouldn't just necessarily be relied on. You need to have a backup. And James Milner now at 33 or 34, maybe, probably you don't really want playing as left back if Robertson got injured. Joe Gomez wouldn't be a, you know, he can fill in at right back, but not necessarily left back. So Tsimikas for me was not the most exciting signing. Don't know a hell of a lot about him, but something that he simply had to do.
Well, Olympiacos, with him in the side, did have an absolutely ridiculous record last season. Before the season came to an abrupt end, they were unbeaten in the league, and they'd allowed 9 goals in 26 games.
Okay,
which
nice.
Is mental. And obviously, they knocked Arsenal out of the Europa League as well. Tsimikas has only been a starter for them for about 18 months, so he's still, which is quite late for a guy who's already 24. But yeah, this is the thing, right? Like, when we were doing our predictions for who would win the league, my prediction that City would, well, it was based on the fact that I thought their stats were at least as good as Liverpool's last season, but it was also based on the fact that this is a shortened season, no winter break, very little pre-season, and I thought that as a result, squad size and squad depth was probably going to be the deciding factor. You know, if you lose a significant player, if you're Man City, they've done that the last few seasons and they've been kind of fine every time. You know, they obviously had trouble in the absence of Laporte, but they've dealt with the absence of a left back. They've dealt with Aguero sitting out for long periods. They've dealt with the absence of De Bruyne for long stretches. But now I think that Liverpool trying to get this depth relatively cheaply can really, really close that gap. So I'm quite intrigued to see how Tsimikas turns out. I kind of want to see him play. But like you said, I think Robertson is one of those guys who Klopp is going to rely on as much as he possibly can. He's going to play him into the ground.
Was I hearing the beginnings of a U-turn then on your predictions now these new signings have been made, Pat, then?
No, I will sit with City for now.
Nice.
And to be honest, I think it's a bit of a coin flip. You know?
It's like, tight.
It definitely is. But all my criticisms of Liverpool over the last few years have started to be addressed by this window. So shall we move on to Thiago, which is...
Yeah, let's.
I don't know if it's... Maybe it's the most exciting. It's certainly the most high profile of these signings, right? This is a guy who is one of the best central midfielders in the world. He's joined for an absolute bargain fee. I think it's 20 mil up front plus 5 in add-ons, something like that.
But I heard initially 5 mil, and then 5 mil every year as well. So it's even better. But I think, as you said, I think his wages are pretty high, aren't they?
Well, yeah, apparently, pretty reliable rumours said that he was actually offered to Arsenal. I think they said United, Spurs, City. I think that basically, Bayern knew he wanted to go to Liverpool. Liverpool knew he wanted to come to them, but Bayern really hoped that they could drum up some other interest in him in the hope that they could get a little bit more out of Liverpool. But the rumours said that the wages he was asking for were as high as 330k a week. And for a guy who's 29 with a 4-year contract, that is a lot, even when they're as good as Thiago. Whereas for Liverpool, you kind of think... When your team's this settled, when your team's this good, you can actually afford to get in these guys and say, you know what, we'll get 3 or 4 years out of him where, yes, maybe he's in decline, but he's going to be good enough to contribute. Like, that's the advantage of having such a solid side, of having, like, an incredible ground-eating centre-back like Van Dijk, like having quality fullbacks, having guys who are a bit more energetic, like a fit Oxlade-Chamberlain, a fit Cater, like Wijnaldum, like Fabinho. They're all pretty mobile guys. What do you think that he offers this Liverpool midfield, Dukes? Is there anything new he offers, or is he just a straight-up upgrade for one of the midfielders? Or what role do you see him playing?
I would play him not in the holding role, which he did at Bayern to a large extent over the last couple of years, because he can kind of do anything very well in midfield. But I'd actually play him alongside... Fabinho and Jordan Henderson probably in midfield, with Naby Keita swapping in for Henderson as well. I think his ability to break the press will be really useful to them. His ability to pick out not just the obvious ball, but the ball that not everyone sees necessarily, and just execute it consistently every single time. I think something that Mane and Salah are going to really profit from, because although Henderson's balls from that wide right channel have become so lethal in the last few years, it really has been still Firmino that's built the majority of Liverpool's attacks over the last couple of years, whereas now they've just got this unreal sort of almost quarterback in midfield, who's a phenomenal dribbler as well. I think last year, 3.6 dribbles a game, nearly a 90% completion rate, which is just insane. My one concern is, I actually hadn't thought about it until you just mentioned his name there, but I'd completely forgot about Oxlade-Chamberlain. And like his future does look... it's not as clear as it once was, because I think Naby Keita has now come back and played really well in the last few months. He played exceptionally well after lockdown. They brought in Thiago. Gini Wijnaldum might not leave to Barcelona. I mean, maybe by the time this podcast goes live, I'll look a bit silly on that, but I don't think it's a definite. And so Ox is now looking like he's sort of seventh choice in midfield, maybe, which is pretty worrying considering he's done well in patches for Liverpool, but he just hasn't been able to get that consistency up because of a run of injury. So that is my only concern. But for Klopp to have such a depth of resources in midfield can only be a good thing going forward, I think.
Well, I suppose the good thing about the Ox is that he is versatile. Like, when he's fit, he is versatile. He could play in midfield. He could also probably fill in at right back for Liverpool. Like, they're so dominant that I don't think that would be a major issue.
He could probably fill in on the wings as well.
Yeah, he could definitely fill in on the wings. Certainly, at least in cup games, you'd have thought. So in that sense, it's not too big a problem. But there was a rumour that Wolves were interested in him after selling Doherty. It looks like they moved on to Nelson Semedo from Barcelona. But you could imagine that. That would kind of make sense for them. But I think the thing is about Thiago, his numbers in every single category are outstanding. And they're better than everybody else in Liverpool's midfield. Like, last season, he made more tackles and interceptions per game than anyone in Liverpool's midfield, despite the fact that Bayern are a higher possession side than Liverpool. Like you said, his 3.6 dribbles a game, that's the best for any midfielder in Europe. And obviously way better than any Liverpool player, because their midfielders actually play quite reserved roles. He's incredibly intelligent. He can play as a 10. He can play as a 6. He can play as an 8. You'd imagine that there's nobody better for a midfielder as talented as Naby Keita to develop alongside than Thiago, you know. And I think as well, like, they're going to need this depth, because so far, the first couple of weeks of the season, we've seen Fabinho filling in at centre-back in the absence of fit options to play alongside Van Dijk there. Wijnaldum, like you say, linked to Barcelona. Keita and Oxlade-Chamberlain, pretty ropey injury histories. Henderson and Milner, obviously well into their 30s now. Thiago can cover for pretty much all those players, and in most cases, can improve on them. Like, he doesn't have the... While he's a very good dribbler, he certainly doesn't have the speed of a lot of those other midfielders. But in his ability to perform a variety of roles and be where he needs to be at any given time, he's clearly still one of the best in the world. I think this is an incredible coup for Liverpool.
Yeah, absolutely. I said it on Continental Club a couple of weeks ago. I think this is one of my favourite signings of the last sort of 5 or 6 years, to be honest. I generally can't really see a downside of it, except for Klopp having just more options in midfield, maybe more unhappiness in his squad when they're not getting regular minutes. But I think he's proven over the last 2-3 years that he can manage his resources really effectively. I mean, all players, even squad players, seem to love Klopp, which is really rare at any club. So I think going forward, this is just a phenomenal steal. And you even saw it in the game against Chelsea. Yes, he gave away a penalty, and it was against 10 men Chelsea, but just the control he gives that side. And they played Chelsea completely off the park. I know they had 10 men, but it really did, you know, the gulf was massive. And Thiago will help, you know, that gap just look even larger against every side in the league, except for Man City, I think. I think it really is going to be a very clear two-horse race.
Yeah, completely agree. I'm very excited about it, actually. Thiago makes me kind of want to watch Liverpool a little bit more. We're going to go on to talk about Diogo Jota and the possibility of a centre-back. But before that, we'd like to bring you a word from our sponsors.
Yes.
It's Manscaped. Breaking news. This public service announcement is brought to you by Manscaped.com, or as they like to call it, a pubic service announcement.
Oh, hey. There we go.
But after 18 months of research and development, the Manscaped engineering team has confirmed that they've successfully created the greatest ball hair trimmer ever created. Imagine that, Doogie, the greatest ball hair trimmer. Imagine.
What a time to be alive.
Yeah, I know, right? Like, this is like NASA level. Yes, this new trimmer was just released. The new and improved Lawnmower 3.0 Manscaped trimmer is available for purchase. This third generation trimmer features a cutting edge ceramic blade to reduce grooming accidents, as I think you'll all agree, a very important factor when we're talking this region. They've got advanced skin safe technology pioneered by Manscaped. Now, Doogie, last time we were sponsored by Manscaped, I asked you whether you had any interesting stories, and just the word blood has stuck in my head from that time.
Yeah, no, I think just, yeah, growing up, you make all sorts of errors, so I really should have got a hold of Manscaped back then. But yeah, if you want any more information or maybe a little bit of a show, head to my OnlyFans, really. That's the only place for it.
Good to know. I'm sure that you probably will get a bunch of people like searching your name on OnlyFans after this. But anyway, the Lawnmower 3.0 is premium. The battery will last up to 90 minutes if the job takes you that long. Look, obviously, you know, take care, be safe, make sure that you take your time. There's an LED light, so that kind of illuminates grooming areas. If that's something you want, again, for safety reasons, it probably is. There's a 7,000 RPM motor with what's called quiet stroke technology, which also made me laugh when I originally read this. And there's a charging stand too, so that you can put it in pride of place in your room, a rapid charging dock via USB. So if you are an Extra Time listener, you're actually one of the first people to hear about this life-changing product, as I'm sure you'll agree once you've checked into Doogie's OnlyFans. And we want you to experience it firsthand yourself. 20% off and free shipping you can get with the code EXTRA at manscaped.com. That's 20% off and free shipping with the code EXTRA at manscaped.com. Your balls will thank you. Your self-esteem will thank you. And we all need a little bit of added self-esteem during lockdown.
Absolutely.
And so, yeah, make sure to head to manscaped.com and onlyfans.com/fromthedougout. And let's move on to our next section, shall we?
Let's do it.
So on the topic of premium quality, let's move on to Liverpool's attacking edition, which is Diogo Jota. Now, like I said, I think a lot of people have thought of me as kind of the Liverpool naysayer, and I don't think that's necessarily true. I just think that sometimes you wanna say there's this little cause for concern here, and it's just something the club need to be aware of. And I think that attacking depth has been that thing for quite a long time.
Yeah.
I've never been the biggest fan of Origi, though he certainly has some clutch goals on his CV. But they added Minamino in January, and now they've added Diogo Jota, which is really the first big attacking signing they've made since Mo Salah. It looks like he's going to cost around 50 million euros, 45 million pounds in the end. That includes add-ons. He turns 24 in December. But last season, he got a bit of criticism, didn't he, Dukes? Like, it didn't seem like he'd necessarily pushed on from the season before when you looked at the raw goal and assist numbers.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, he only got 8 goals and assists last season compared to 14 the year before. But for me, I think it's a slight overpay. I probably wouldn't have paid as much, but I think he's an excellent player. And I actually think he's a big step up on Ismail Assar as well. As much as I like Ismail Assar, I think he's got quite a bit more developing to do.
Well, certainly when they were talking about 36 mil for Assar, you think, Jota for 45.
Yeah, exactly. And Assar had effectively 10 or 12 sort of really strong games between November and February. But either side, his goal involvements were pretty minimal, albeit in a very poor Watford side, whereas Jota is playing, obviously, for a much better side and a much better system under a much better manager. But I really like Diogo Jota. He can play in a number of positions. He can play on the right, he can play left, he can play more centrally as well. He's very direct, he's really committed. I think he works exceptionally hard as well. His pressures are always really high. I think they were up as 23 per game last year, which was higher than all Liverpool's forwards. I mean, Firmino was the top on 21. And I think a lot of Liverpool fans would be like, you know, why didn't we use this money and get Timo Werner? Well, I think the logic of Klopp was that Timo Werner would come in and, having contributed, 30 plus league goals last year, he would demand minutes. He would demand to start. Whereas Diogo Jota, I saw Rory Smith put it out on Twitter, who works for the New York Times. I actually think he's a very good journalist. He put on Twitter, he's that Goldilocks signing, because he's perfect in that he'll be able to contribute when he's paid, but he's not the big enough name that he'll demand minutes, he'll kick up a fuss, he'll be delighted to be at Liverpool. He's joining one of the best clubs in the world. And I think he's ready to contribute quite regularly, to be fair. I can see him swapping in and out with Mane for sort of easier Premier League games, Cup games, Champions League games, and also Salah as well, and could also do a job centrally, although the system would have to change quite dramatically if he was replacing Firmino. So I really like Diogo Jota, and I think it's a great move for him and a sensible one if a slight overpay from Liverpool.
Do you think that this potentially means that one of the forwards will be sold next summer?
I think they're basically planning. It's always good to plan for the worst in any walk of life, really. Always assume the worst. It's the same as when you're driving. You've got to assume that anyone's about to hit you in your car. And I think Liverpool are doing that with this signing as well. They're assuming that Mane, Salah. I think particularly Salah will be hot property next summer. Although it's quite difficult to see where he'd go, to be fair, because I don't think he's going to go to Barcelona. I think Real Madrid are really doing this Project Mbappe thing. I think they've got that nailed to their mast now. So I'm not quite sure where they're going to go. And if they don't go, but great for Liverpool. But, you know, they're just planning for that eventuality. But I think Diego Jota is quite a big ask for him to replace a Salah or a Mane's output right now. But in a couple of years, who knows?
Well, it was an interesting thing, though, I was reading the other day. There's a football writer called Grace Robertson on Twitter who's written for StatsBomb before. And she is a Liverpool fan. And she said, I'm not sure what her source was for this, but she said that she'd read something a few years ago which basically said that Liverpool's aim with their squad rebuild was to win the league in 2019-20, win the league in 2020-21, then have two seasons where they'd have to rebuild. And, you know, obviously they try and do as well as they could, but if they finished much lower in the league, that would be acceptable to the board. And then they try and win the league again three seasons from now.
Really? I mean, it kind of makes sense.
Yeah, it does make sense, right? And it suggests that they did have this plan in mind, that they were like, look, in the summer of 2021, we're going to have three forwards, so I think we'll all be 29 or thereabouts. Firmino might be a little bit older. And at that point, we accept that we're going to have to sell one of them. In fact, we kind of want to sell one of them. That's the thing that I think people don't necessarily get, that they will probably want to sell one of them to then fund the next iteration of this side. And obviously, you know, Wijnaldum's contract runs out then. If he doesn't go before then, Henderson is getting on. Milner played under 1,000 minutes last season. Lallana's gone. So a lot of the squad players are turning over already. That, to me, kind of suggests that we would expect Jota to be a rotation player this season, but that next season he may well be a starter in a slightly different looking size. You know, maybe they go to a 4-2-3-1 and they do keep everyone, but maybe they do sell one of their stars. I kind of agree with you that actually, I wonder, it depends how smart the teams around them are, because I think that a few years ago you'd have said, if you are hoping to sell one of them to fund that next team, I think that 5 years ago, that would have been really easy to do. You'd have been like, we're going to have three stars who will be all 29. Somebody will definitely come in with a massive offer for one of them and we'll be able to sell them. But now, as good as those players are, I wonder if somebody will offer Liverpool an amount worth taking.
Yeah.
Like I could see people saying, look, we love Sadio Mane. He is one of the best wide players in the world, but he's 29 and you're willing to sell him. Are we going to give you 100 million for him? I don't know if teams will do that anymore. And I think if Liverpool don't get an offer kind of like significantly above the sort of 70 mark, then Liverpool would probably say, well, actually, he's worth more to us just to keep him for a couple of years, you know?
Absolutely. Yeah, I feel like in the last couple of years, particularly with Mbappe and Sancho and now Haaland, etc., like players are really, really good, much younger than they were 5 or 6 years ago. So if you're a Real Madrid, why would you target Salah or Mane over Mbappe or Sancho? It doesn't make any financial sense. I think you're quite right that maybe Liverpool will be in a position where they don't get that big money move for one of their top stars. But I think they're just planning for that eventuality in case they do. And it's just more smart work from Michael Edwards and his team.
Yeah, it'd be really interesting to see what they do, because they have got all the major decisions right along the way. So I kind of give them the benefit of the doubt on this, but I am still intrigued, because there are plenty of teams that have shown they're really, really good at building good sides, but then how they move on from those good sides and build the next one, that's a little bit more difficult to say. Let's talk about centre-back, last thing, because to me, this is the last really significant area of need. As we said, Fabinho's played centre-back. Hasn't seemed to be a problem. Yes, they conceded 3 goals to Leeds, but I don't think that was necessarily because of breakdowns in the centre-back line quite so much as maybe the midfield, where it was a little bit too easy to play through them. Against Chelsea, it was a really dominant performance, obviously helped by that red card. But Lovren was sold in the summer, and in that Chelsea game, there wasn't a single centre-back on the bench, which is a little bit concerning.
Yeah.
So the current major rumour on the market is that Liverpool are after Schalke centre-back Ozan Kabak. He's Turkish. He's 20 years old. I think he's played a season and a half in the Bundesliga now. Like the season before, he spent half the year at Stuttgart. He spent this last season at Schalke. He's a big unit. He's a big guy. And his numbers, I think, look quite interesting. Like 3.8 defensive actions a game last season. That's pretty high for a centre-back. Completed 84% of his tackles. And he's got this thing that I think we seem to see a lot, actually, with Liverpool centre-back targets. I think Klopp really likes guys who are dominant in the air. Mm. He's got a 67% aerial win rate, which for a guy of his age is very, very high and will probably go up. And he got 3 goals and an assist last season, so he's obviously a threat in the box on set pieces too. Dukes, is this somebody who you'd go for, or do you think that they'd be better off maybe looking for a kind of lights-out centre-back partner for Van Dijk? Because it's a little bit hard, right? If Van Dijk gets injured this season, then suddenly maybe people do get a little bit more worried about them.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think Van Dijk and Gomez have actually both, you know, not been at the top of their game for a little while now, a good couple of months at least. Van Dijk's obviously still, you know, for me, the best centre-back in the world. I'm not saying he needs to be dropped or anything, but I just think his form, you know, he is, I think almost on Twitter in particular, like you can't criticise Van Dijk. He's just like this sort of god of the Premier League. But actually, sometimes his performances can like warrant criticism. And I don't think he played particularly well against Leeds. I thought Gomez was really poor against Leeds. He kept on getting pulled out of position and passed round, although Leeds' attacking threat was fantastic. And then, yeah, Fabinho did a great job against Timo Werner on Sunday. But Kabak, I mean, I haven't watched a whole lot of him, to be honest, but Schalke as a whole had a really bad end to the last year, end to the last campaign under David Wagner. They then kicked off with an 8-0 loss to Bayern Munich, which I'm not sure whether Kabak was playing in. But Schalke are a pretty poor side at the moment. So, you know, your tackle interceptions numbers are probably going to look pretty good. But for his numbers across the board to look so promising, it's definitely, you know, one to keep an eye on, I would say. I actually, for Sunday Vibes, I suggested Jason Denayer. I think he'd be happy with a third choice role at Liverpool. I think his performances at the back end of the season, particularly in the Champions League with Lyon, suggest he can play at a higher level. Doesn't have Champions League football this year with Lyon, of course. And he's only 25 as well. And having played, you know, for the likes of Celtic, Man City, etc., but obviously as a squad player, I think he'd be happy to go to a club like Liverpool and win trophies, even if he is just a squad, you know, filling in the numbers, maybe playing 20 games a year in all competitions. So yeah, Kabak's maybe one to look at, but I go Denayer, I think.
Interesting. I always find it extremely hard to think of centre-backs for top sides, because I just think you need to watch a centre-back week in, week out to get an understanding of whether they're any good or not. But in a way, it's quite a nice situation to come into at Liverpool. Like, yes, there's pressure. Yes, there are high expectations, but you're going to be playing next to one of the best centre-backs in the world. You've got excellent full-backs around you, though I'd say Trent is an amazing fullback without necessarily being a great defensive fullback, but you're going to have protection. So I don't know. I kind of think that this would be an interesting one to see. In €25 million for a 20-year-old who's playing in one of the top leagues, I think that seems like pretty reasonable money. So once again, this has the chance of being another steal for Liverpool. So should we move on from the Reds now? Because I'm kind of bored of talking about them and how good they are.
They are a very good side, yeah.
Well, and also we're going to look silly when we've talked about how good Liverpool are and then they get absolutely battered at Anfield by Arsenal next week. You know, because this is the thing, like, they've got a goal difference now of what? Of plus +3? I just can't see them catching Arsenal over the course of the season. Who have a goal difference of plus +4.
You are the greatest side in the land, yeah.
Well, you know, Man City, 0 points at the time of recording. That's all I'm saying. Arsenal, 6 points.
This is true. And so, struggling to beat West Ham, but we won't talk about that.
Well, but yeah. That was f***ing terrible, that game. Oh, my God. But, well, I say that. It wasn't as terrible games were under Emery. I'll give it that. But, yeah, it wasn't good. Shall we move on then to one thing we learned this week? Doogie.
Sure.
I think of you as a man who's open to learning new things, and so I would like to know what information you have gleaned from this week's action.
I thought the information that I most gleaned from the Premier League this weekend is that it's just a bit batshit crazy at the moment.
Okay.
Like, I think the nature of how the pre-season has gone, with the end of the year as well, a really short pre-season, and basically different sides' fitness levels are extraordinarily different at the moment. Like, there's some teams that are in completely different shape to others. Like, I read that Crystal Palace has had 3 preseason games and a game. They then played United, who had 1 preseason game. And the difference in fitness just looked enormous. Like, Man United looked completely toothless. to break down a Palace side, which, you know, yeah, they put, you know, a good 9-10 men behind the ball. But there was just a lack of ideas. I thought they all looked really flat. I thought, you know, Solskjaer's decision-making was really bizarre in terms of his formation, in terms of the squad makeup. I thought Dan James was a weird inclusion. Fosu Mensah was a weird inclusion, although Fosu Mensah actually had quite a good game in the end. But that was bizarre. And I think that's why we've seen so many goals this weekend, because defensive structure hasn't been worked on particularly. Fitness is really low. And it's just made for a great start to the Premier League season. I'm absolutely loving it so far. I thought Everton were awesome going forward against West Brom, but their midfield, unlike against Spurs, looked completely open for business. Like, they were just running through at will, West Brom. I thought West Brom are the most entertaining West Brom side I've ever seen. Not saying a lot, admittedly, but they look completely different to when they last came up. And it's just the chaos of the Premier League, and it's back, and I'm really enjoying it. So that was kind of what I took from the weekend. It was a bit of a weird sort of rant, but yeah, it was just crazy.
No, I completely agree, because like there were some results that I was like, I can't believe like what I'm seeing. Like Leicester are a good side, but you don't expect Burnley to concede 4 to them.
Exactly.
And Southampton absolutely dominated Spurs the first half, and then in the second half just looked like their fitness levels were not there, and they had not had the pre-season they'd expect, because they were making the same... Like, Spurs are like all right, and Kane had a great passing game, but it shouldn't be that easy when you've basically only got Kane and Son versus like 4 defenders for them to create a one-on-one with the goalkeeper.
Yeah, I think there was 3 or 4 games, I can't remember exactly, with 7 goals, which just sort of summed it up really.
And the only one I watched from start to finish had 3 goals, Arsenal versus West Ham, and it was... But like I said, you know, it's the sign of champions to win dirty, so that's the main thing.
This is true.
Well, we can actually, having touched on Spurs, that's actually quite a good point, because the thing I learned is that Dele Alli might be on the move this summer.
Yeah.
I was kind of looking at the arrival, less of Bale, more of Reguilon, and thinking, you know what? I think Jose Mourinho is not great anymore. Or at least I don't think that he has understood important things about competing for top 4. And the ways that that is different from competing for a title against like one other big team in the mid-2000s. Like in the mid-2000s, like Mourinho was happy to run over like 90% of sides with a team that was way better than them. And then when he played a rival for a title, he would just destroy the game. Like it would be really muddy, it would be really dull, like almost nothing would happen and they'd come away with a draw.
Mm.
And I think that that's really baked into Mourinho's mindset. And so he often does that with Spurs when he knows they've got a tough fixture. And you can't do that when you've got this many rivals for a top 4 place. Like, you just have to try and win, because a draw is worth almost nothing to you. Mm. It's almost better to have like lots of losses and lots of wins than to have a bunch of draws, as Arsenal proved last season. And it kind of cost Wolves as well. So I don't know. I don't think Mourinho's necessarily the right fit, but I do think that squad is really exciting. That Spurs squad.
Absolutely.
And so I'm kind of glad if they do end up selling Dele Alli, because I still think Dele Alli's a fantastic player.
Mm.
He was left out of the squad for Southampton, and Mourinho says he will play in the Carabao Cup, but it seems very clear that he's willing to move on from him, with some very strong rumours that he's been offered around Europe and PSG reportedly already in negotiations. Now, I think it's understandable, the kind of narrative about Dele Alli getting worse over the years. Like, I think his first season in the Prem, 19 goal involvements. The next season, 25. The season after that, 19. And then it went down to 8 in 2018-19 and 12 in 2019-20. And the concern there is that his hamstring issues have just not been resolved. And it's possible that his hamstring will never be the same. Like, that is possible. So that's the concern about Dele Alli. But his underlying numbers remain excellent. Like, his expected goals and assists per 90 are exactly the same now as they were at the beginning of his time at Spurs, which you could argue shows he hasn't pushed on, but he's also played a bunch of different roles. He has had injuries. He's currently playing in a worse side than he was in 2016-17. Hasn't really improved as a dribbler, but still a good dribbler with 1.4 a game. Defensive action's down a lot. Like, in his early days at Spurs, he played like a youngster trying to make an impression. I think he was winning the ball back nearly 5 times a game. It's at half that level now, but he still presses really hard. And he can play... People kind of talk as if, like, oh, he can... George Wright is the ultimate, like, Dele Alli denier. this conversation in our group chat, I checked in just to see what George was saying about Dele Alli, and he's just decided that Dele Alli is shit, and he objectively isn't. Dele Alli can play as an 8, he can play as a 10. He's pretty versatile, he's a good level, and he's 24. The issue for somebody wanting to sign him, potentially the injury problem, and that he has a contract till 2024. So I do think that it would cost a lot of money to get him out. But I kind of think PSG, I can understand why PSG want him. Like, Di Maria's getting no younger. I don't think they're going to hand, you know, the creative keys of their attack to Sarabia. Neymar is either the third best player in the world, or he's a bit of a liability, like he was in the Champions League final. And I did think in the Champions League final, what was missing from that team was some physicality. Like, no Cavani, didn't start Icardi. I understand why they didn't start Choupo-Moting. But when you're playing against a side that's going to press you, one of the ways to get around it is to go over it, right? To hit long balls just over a pressing midfield. But with as strong as Mbappe is, he's not stronger than Niklas Süle, who is absolutely enormous.
Or he's a tank, yeah.
Yeah, and Neymar isn't going to win an aerial ball either. Whereas I do think that Alli can physically compete with big defenders.
And he's got that grit as well. Mm. Like, he's a bit of a bastard to play against. I think that's why Mourinho seemed to really like him when he went in, you know, from the judgment of that Amazon doc. But I'm with you. I think he's so easily criticised and regularly criticised on social media, Dele Alli. But I think he's an awesome player. I just think he's a bit of a hybrid in terms of his position. And actually, that's kind of not helped him in the past. Yes. I don't think he doesn't really play like a 10 when he plays like a 10. He's not outstandingly creative when he plays in that 10 role. But yet, you probably wouldn't want him on a wing, and you wouldn't want him as a false nine, and you wouldn't quite want him in midfield. So he didn't quite fit in, but he's got a sort of range of skills that makes him useful on the pitch in all those positions, I think. And unless Spurs are careful, unless Mourinho's got an idea that he's really going to use Ndombele this year alongside Højbjerg and Winks and push Giovanni Lo Celso into a 10 role, or maybe he's planning 4-3-3, but I think you've got to be careful with selling Dele Alli with 2 weeks of the window left, because he will come in handy at one stage to your season. And proved it last year. He was crucial for Spurs for long stretches when they were really struggling for creativity and goals. He really stepped up, particularly when Kane and Son were injured. So I think this is a risk from Spurs, and it might be one of those signings you look back on in 4 to 5 years' time and just be like, why did we let that guy go?
Completely agree. I think it's a risk as well, unless Mourinho has buried the hatchet with Ndombele, because I think Lo Celso can easily play 10 and is arguably a better fit for a 10 in a possession system rather than a transition side than Alli is. But if you're starting Højbjerg and Winks in central midfield for most of the season, I personally don't think that that's good enough. I think that's our show for today. Dougs, is there anything that people should go and check out after this?
Yes, go and check out the Football Pyramid on Eurofootball Daily. It was Joe versus Danny Pape. More controversy, came down to a buzzer. So go give me your thoughts on that. But please be nice. I took a lot of crap on that again. but yeah, go check that out. And obviously all our content across all our three channels.
Yeah, make sure that you subscribe to Football Daily Podcast if you're watching this on YouTube, and make sure that you subscribe to the podcast on whichever podcast app you use, Spotify, iTunes, they have a podcast thing, right? And what do I use? I use Overcast.
Nice.
Yeah, pretty cool. Thank you very much for watching, and hopefully we'll see you next time. Thank you very much to you too, Doogie. We'll catch you all later. And of course, if you want to take advantage of that Manscaped deal, go to manscaped.com and use the code EXTRA for 20% off and free shipping. We'll see you next time.
Bye.